This is Unmasked, the Stigma of Meth. I'm Nick Ciano. This episode picks up where the previous one left off, with our anonymous source who used meth in the late 80s telling her story about the profound impact it had on her life. We ended on a bit of a cliffhanger, that even though she got clean and didn't use meth again, someone close to her became addicted. That's the crux of this episode, exploring how she was able to cope with someone else's addiction after having dealt with it herself. What are some challenges for addicts trying to re-enter the community?
For me, I can only see it from a personal experience with one of my children.
Her son, to be exact. Her second oldest.
And just in the last 2 months between this state and a couple other states, I would get phone calls.
He'd call her and say he was being chased or someone was out to kill him.
You need to call the police for me, Mom. You need to call the police. I'm like, you're not being chased. No one's chasing you. He's been in the hospital 3 or 4 times just in the last 2 or 3 months with being dehydrated and in a meth psychosis is what they call it.
Meth psychosis is the presence of hallucinations or delusions after someone uses the drug. They might not be able to provide a history of themselves. Their senses could be out of tune. Or they could be having delusions of any kind, like the exaggerated threat that someone is out to get them.
Every time he does it, he shoots it. He was snorting it, and then he starts shooting it. And it's devastating when you know that it's not real. And so I'm like, one time you do this can kill you. It just takes one.
She fears the amount of chemicals her son is putting into his body. Back when she used it, she was able to claim ignorance. She had no idea what was in meth.
And that was the thing that was unique about where I got it in California is we got it straight from the dealer, or, you know, one person through. By the time it gets here or by the time someone makes it here, you have no idea what they put into it.
Most recipes, if you will, for meth call for about the same ingredients. Acetone, usually in the form of nail polish remover, hydrochloric acid, lithium, often from strips out of batteries, and drain cleaner, just to name a few.
And you put a little bit too much of this and a little bit too much of that, and boom, you're dead. And that's what I was trying to explain to my child, but you can't.
She said he's been in and out of her life throughout his time using the drug.
And it would take days for him to come out of it. So the challenge for him, and what I see with the young people now, or even people my age, is that they say the first time you do it, you're addicted. And so you want the same feeling, that same buzz on the first time that you did it, but you never achieve that because the paranoia kicks in and the desire to want it, and then you don't want to come down.
She knew a bit about building a tolerance from her stint using the drug. She had stopped and then assumed that she kept that tolerance when she picked it back up a few months later. A tolerance is built rapidly when using meth, but it can go away just as quickly.
Well, that was the other thing with me, is when you come down, that's when you crave it. Actually, I'm having memory flashbacks now. So when you're coming down is when you want more because you don't want to feel that way. Because you crash down hard, you're tired, you're hungry. So if you do a little bit more, you're going to be back up to where you were before, and then you don't have to feel that coming down. And that's what I've noticed the pattern with my son, is that he wants to keep doing it, or then he'll, you know, take a bunch of pills or smoke pot or something to come down.
She said he hasn't been able to cope well while using meth. He seems like an outcast and isn't willing to take the steps to look for help.
And so getting back into society, whether they've already lost a job or they've already lost a family, it's a personal choice if they want a life better than what they have.
So there's challenges every way we look at it. Some people, her son included, don't want to quit and don't want to look for help either. When she was a user, she said people were more open to getting help. But to her, the entire drug culture is in stark contrast to what she grew up in.
I personally think it's a lot more hardcore because the situation I was in, we weren't out desperate to get it. You know, it was pretty much readily available. And we still function at our jobs. We might stay up all night or might call in every now and then.
But this was life. It almost sounds carefree. And now,
you know, they're walking the streets, you know, they're prostituting themselves out. They're selling whatever they can, you know, steal and pawn. You know, they're losing their families. You know, you see the scabs on their face where they're picking all everywhere. I mean, and that's just me from the media, from what I've seen, and also my own experience with my son.
Meth can be ingested in nearly any possible way since it's a powder. It can be put into capsules, it could be mixed with liquids, it can be snorted or smoked, just to name a few ways.
I know a lot of them now are smoking it more than snorting it or injecting it. And I never smoked it or injected anything. I mean, I've smoked something, but not meth. So but when we did it, it was, I guess, a lot more laid back because everybody just snorted it instead of trying all these other ways to do it. At least the people I was around, that's what we did.
Addicts have said that snorting gives a smoother, longer-lasting high, whereas smoking gives a harder, faster high.
Recovery in general for anybody is going to be more beneficial to their life and their choices, whether it's their job, whether it's their children, their spouse, you know, their family. As far as because it basically, if you want to be a productive member of society, you can't sit around and do meth all day. I mean, if you do you want to get a job, you know, do you want to support yourself? Do you not want to live off the welfare system? You know, do you want to give something back instead of taking it and destroying your body in the process?
She has seen some glimmer of hope in the community. Public officials have used the drug problem as a campaign point.
Well, I know that one of the prosecutors' slogan used to be rehabilitate, don't incarcerate. And my one son that has the meth problem actually spent a year in prison.
Prison, where she said inmates could still get their hands on whatever drug they'd like.
As a collective whole, I don't really honestly don't know because it's a personal choice. And there's always going to be somebody in the back of their car or in the back of a house making meth. And it's cheap, from what I understand. And so it's such a widespread problem. There's going to be the fortunate group that are going to be incarcerated, and they may or may not be able to stay off of it.
It's a vicious circle, repetitive and destructive.
I mean, I have, you know, I have it personal for me, you know, with my child. But it's also, I mean, as you read in the paper all the time, you know, a couple caught in the back of a car making meth, you know, falling asleep at the wheel, or not falling asleep, but, you know, with their kids in the car. We each can only take care of each other. I mean, collectively as a group, we can work. But if somebody wants help, we can help them. But if they don't, there's really nothing to do about it. And that's what's sad.
That's it for this episode. If you have any questions or want to talk to us about what we're covering, you can email us at unmaskedbsu@gmail.com. I'm Nick Ciano. Thanks for listening.